Welcome to the Popol Nah Podcast, Episode 2, Intro to the Popol Vuh, Part 2.
Utikaribal, ushena bal puch, ronhelch bam patinamit kiche, rama kiche unak. Arekut, chika kamwe, ukotoni sashik, ukalho sashik, utsihoshik puch, ewashibal, sakir bal rumal sakol, bitol, alom kaholom kipi. Kunakpu puch, kunakpu tiw. Sakinim aksis tepeu okumats ukuscho ukuspalo ahrashalak ahrashatsel shuchashik rachbishik rachtsihoshik riyom mamom shpiakok shmukaneubi matsanel chukunel kamul iyom kamul mamom shuchashik pakichetsir Tashki tzihoh runohel, ruk shki banchik, chisakil kolem, sakil tzih. Wash chi katzibach chi upamchik, uchabal dios, pa kristiano yilchik. Shchi kelesach rumal, mahabichik ilbal repopuh, ilbal sak petenak, chakapalo, utzihoshik, kamuhibal, Ilbal sak kaslem shuchashik. Kona be wuhil poher tzibam puch. Shae wal wach ilolre bisolre. Nim upeoshik utzihoshik puch. Tachik is tzu kronohel kahuleu. Ukah tzukushik. Ukah shukutashik retashik. Ukah cheshik. Umech kamashik, uyuk kamashik upakah upaulev. Kachtzok, kachshukut, shuchashik rumalritzakot mitol, uchuch ukahav kaslem winakirem. Ahanel, kushlanel, alayhrech, kushlayhrech sakil, amakil, sakilal, sakil kahol. Achbis, achna och chiret sonohel, atakol wi kahuleu chopalo. Utsi petik chiwech ihuhunal, rinubiin are apumatsok. Welcome everyone, my name is Pumatsok.
Chiva abach ula le masani lim I Aurora Pedro, I eni okietun ulan anima chich popolna. Hi everyone, my name is Aurora Pedro and I'm with the Popol Nah team.
Hello everybody, this is Jose Flores Chamale.
Hello everyone, my name is Brianna Rodriguez.
Good afternoon, good evening everyone, my name is Willy Barreno.
Hello, my name is Gaby.
My name is Javier and we are part of the Popol Nah team.
So the last time we kind of talked about, obviously we talked the history about what was happening in the moment or the time that the Popol Vuh was being written and most likely why it was written and how it was written on under obviously very difficult circumstances as the invasion had been fully in impacted the communities that the writers of the Popol Vuh had been in. You know, obviously those who, you know, haven't heard the first podcast can go back and recap it. So we won't necessarily get into much of those things. We'll just take it from there. But the important things that we talked about from the story was basically the creation of the earth and the trees, the forest, and we met some very important names like Ishpiakok. We met Tepeu Kukumats. We've met, you know, we talked about them. we have a glossary for all the Patreon users so they can review the names and what they mean. You know, those have been really important to help on people understand that we're not talking about deities, we're not talking about gods, but we're talking about a council of creation that is coming together in thought and prayer to have the world be created. And then that's where we were, and that's where we left off. And then in this part, the creation starts becoming very more specific about an intention that these creators want, and they want providers and they want caregivers. Before we get into Bree reading out loud this part of this story, I think it's important to make a note of the work of translating this story. As mentioned in the previous episode, we're using Sam Kolob's version, which he translated from Quiche to Spanish. We believe that this is the best version since Sam Kolob is a native Quiche speaker and from the community. But it's the work is a little bit harder than just translating the words, because there's also philosophies, there's metaphors, there's cultural things that a direct translation from Spanish to English may not make sense. So we'll go in there and try our best to translate those metaphors and those philosophies. So I think that's an important thing to make note of. And for you, Puma, who is a fluent Quiche speaker, I know that the Popo Vuh was written in a much different Quiche, right? Because that was close to almost, 500 years ago. But as a fluent Quiche speaker, do you what have you read? What versions have you read? And do you feel like reading it in Quiche if you have you get different understanding of it?
Yeah, for me, when I try to read that part that you send me, or this part, it's kind of on some words that it's difficult for me, because as you said, it's reading by long time ago, right? Mm-hmm. And that's different for me right now, and I think for the where I come from, it's different spelling and writing and pronounce that at the same time, right? So it's like kind of challenging for me, but at the same time I really enjoy it, because I try to compare that and what actually I'm spoken right now, or how I spoken right now, and just keep learning with that as well, but yeah, definitely I have some challenges with that.
Yeah, and Javier, I know that you are learning Quiche, and you've been practicing a lot. What has it been with learning Quiche and being able to read this in Quiche? And have you also come across, like, maybe, for me, translating it from the Spanish to the English, I've had some, difficulties translating concepts, that we know, maybe that when we speak Spanish, it's different than when we translate it into English. Because concepts, it's a lot harder to be able to translate, than just words, because words you can, verbatim to, like, translate it, but concepts are really hard. So what's your take on reading it and as you learn, Quiche?
Yeah, that's a good question. Last week I had the chance to meet with Willie and with Nana in Guate. Just like via Zoom, and so we took a second to go through. It was pretty much still the first just few lines, the first few pages. And I know you joined also for a little while there, Jose. So you'll kind of get a sense of what I'm alluding to, right? But I think what has been like what that reinforced to me was the extent to which I know it's kind of cliche, but certain things are kind of lost in translation. Because when the person that we were speaking with was trying to explain certain ideas, like repeatedly, she was just like trying to come up with a word or an idea in Spanish that would explain or like give the idea of what the word in Quiche was. So I think that is like very much just reinforcing the idea of like when you're learning a new language, no matter the context or, you know, the origin or whatever, like there's always going to be those ideas that you have to like rewire and rework the way you even come to understand things. And I think that something that I'm trying to undo in my Quiche learning is when I see things in Quiche, sometimes my mind wants to like, okay, like think about, oh, what is this saying in Spanish, right? Or what is this saying in English? But I think something that I'm trying to not do is do that and understand the Quiche in Quiche, as opposed to trying to like understand it in Quiche and then translate it like yeah. to a language that I understand more. And then I think like as I was reading this the section that we have designated for today, I was reading the Samkolok version in Spanish at the same time, because it was kind of a curious experience, because there were certain things that I would read it in English and I'd be like, I didn't understand this when I read it in Spanish. And those sections I read recently, because I started rereading the Popol Vuh a couple of weeks ago, and so I would have to like kind of have both side by side, read the English and then read the Spanish, and then be like, okay, how am I understanding this, right? So I think that you know, that's gotta be a whole other story, like when you are going from Quiche to Spanish or Quiche to English or whatever that may be. And then just thinking about the fact, like Puma was saying right now, that the Quiche in the Popol Vuh is different from the spoken Quiche and the written Quiche that we see today in different communities. So I think that the conclusion that I get from that is that as much as I've wanted to like read the Popol Vuh and be like so meticulous and so like, okay, like let me absorb this and be so careful, at the same time also like thinking in terms of like imagination a little bit, not imagination in terms of like making up new things, but also just kind of understanding what the idea is in itself. And I was listening to the first episode before this, and something that we mentioned was like kind of going back to that primitive logic. Mm-hmm. And you know, Willy, you had mentioned that Ishkik, when she like perceived, I think it was I forget who it was exactly, but you said that Ishkik kind of perceived them as like almost like sea creatures. I think it was Ishmukanesh Biakok, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just trying to like understand concepts as they are, but not be like so literal and having to be so exact, I guess is kind of what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think it's a good discussion to have, because, you know, it wasn't until, you know, we started studying this with Willy and him helping us understand it in a much different perspective, it made the story a little bit more understandable for me. You know, when we talk about translation of Tepeuku Kumats, I've seen a lot of books and I've seen a lot of places put those two as two separate people or two separate names, but the reality is it's one name, right? Tepeuku Kumats, sovereign feathered serpent. The understanding of Ushka, right, which is like a lot of the place, it's, you know, heart of sky. But the way that I think that Willy talks about it, it's actually the essence of the sky, right, the essence of earth. That makes so much more sense to me, to be able to do. But that's what's important for all of us, that we're coming together and reading this together. And you know, as a community that we have with the Colonizing Time and all the other people that come together to read this, we're trying to learn this from a community standpoint, because we all have something to interject, whether it be, you know, our creativity, whether it be our handling of the fluency that we have in Quiche, or the knowledge that we have of the history.
Well, I'm gonna be 52 this year. And I think the first time I read the Popol Vuh seriously is when I was 18. And obviously I didn't understand probably 95% or 98% of what I read, because it didn't make sense, because I didn't make a connection with my family and my, you know, the ways that we grew up, you know, being in a Christian family. Mm-hmm. And then often you would translate the Popol Vuh as the Mayan Bible, you know, because of the tale of the creation. And now that I'm 52, I probably have to say that it's a whole different thing, because the Popol Vuh itself, the translation is the Book of Advice. And obviously it has a oral tradition, or maybe a reading tradition in stone, about how our ancestors perceived the origin. I'm not going to even say creation, but the origin of life itself. And then they made it into a poem. I think it's a metaphor about what we are trying, not to use the word gods or creators, but then we are now proposing that these are natural forces. And then even, you know, in these new times, people are using the concept of energy. And then I've been studying this recently, that there is not even a translation for energy in Mayan languages, because energy comes from, like, you know, the creation of the electricity. But then before electricity, there was no concept of energy. But then instead, I think it's just natural forces. And I had a privilege to work with Violeta Samkolop a few years ago, who is the sister of Enrique Samkolop, who did the most, you know, accurate translations for the Popol Vuh. And then when we started recording, because by the way, we have an audio, you know, it's a audio on SoundCloud, where we have the entire Popol Vuh being spoken, you know, entirely in Quiche, and you should check it out if you have the opportunity. But then she said to me that for her, even she's a native Quiche speaker, it was so hard for her to read it, you know, because obviously in 500 years, the Quiche has changed, and some concepts have been, you know, mistranslated, as, you know, you were saying, you know, Javier, that Christianity has a big impact on the interpretation, or the, como sería la, transcription, you know, from the Quiche to Castellano, you know, 500 years ago. And then when Ximenez did the translation, obviously there is Catholics involved in the first, you know, translations. So one of the things that, you know, talking about Ukushkah, you know, often in Espanol, we will translate Ukushkah into Corazón del Cielo. But then here we have a trouble translating Cielo, because for Christians, it's heaven. But then in nature is sky. I mean, in English, you have two different concepts, what is heaven and what's sky. But then in Spanish, you know, you can mix it up. You know, you can mix it up. And then since we have been colonized by Christianity, when you say Corazón del Cielo, you can quickly connect with St. Peter and God with the white beard, you know, who lives at the heart of the cielo. Mm-hmm. So I think we do it in the sky, you know. And then translating Ukush, you know, I was thinking, you know, that corazón also can be interpreted as the organ, that, you know, that provides us with blood and you know, and pulses. Mm-hmm. And then I asked my father-in-law, who is also a Quiche speaker, native Quiche speaker, and I said, so when I have a heart attack, how do I translate ataque al corazón, a heart attack, into Spanish or Quiche? And it's impossible to translate it, because it's not necessarily the organ. Mm-hmm. So that's when we came up and we started digging that Ukush would be better translated as the essence. And then basically it's everything, you know, everything that's around us and you cannot see. So, I mean, like I said, it's been years and years of trying to, ¿cómo se diría en inglés? Depurar, or like clean, you know, the translations. And, you know, Javier and I, we met with this, Mayan Akeh last week, you know, and we are reading it, and she has never read the Popol Vuh, and obviously when we encounter some verbs that she says, I never used or heard about this verb. So I think it's important now, and that we need to get, you know, like colonial dictionaries, and then also ask elders who don't have access to reading materials and start like, ¿cómo sería? Depurando or cleaning, you know, making the translations. And yesterday I just got this book, Popol Vuh, by Michael Brassett. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one that I have that I constantly use, because I think it's written in a poetic form.
Right. So, I mean, it would be worth it if you guys are reading a Popol Vuh in English. I think it's worth it, but also it's good to question yourselves about what's the language. And I think part of our job here in Popolna is to ask advice, you know, to elders who still have the concept of how they see nature. In this case, like I said, you know, I don't want to call them gods or deities or energies, but I'd rather translate it as force, you know, natural force. So in this case, you know, Tepeu Cucumatz, you know, we're calling or translating that as the respectful, you know, a feather snake, or also, like Ishkik says, you know, my wife says, she sees Tepeu Cucumatz as a creature from the ocean, you know, and that it's very, you know, valid when we talk about the theory of evolution, you know, when, you know, humans, before we were humans, we were sea creatures, right? And pollute, you know, so I think, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm right or wrong, I'm just saying this is what I have discovered in the last, you know, 32 years of trying to decompose, but also reconstruct, you know, what my ancestors tried to communicate with us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure that this is it's a complex work. It's difficult, you know, and by no means that we'll ever say that we're 100% right, but we're proposing, and from the facts that we have now, we're proposing that this is how to interpret this particular book.
Another thing that I wanted to add, Willie just mentioned that I think it's really, which I agree with, it's how important it's question ourselves right now. You know, myself as a Quiche speaker as well, when I was reading this section, I'm like, in my head I was kind of struggle with, because I don't quite understand what it means, you know, and I have to go back and forth, you know, repeating again what this means. And a couple days ago I was reading it in Quiche, and some words that I couldn't understand, so what I had to call my mom and my dad and ask them, you know, what this means, you know, for you, or if you ever hear this word, you know. And they tell me some, they mention some stuff, and I'm like, which is still kind of different, which how it reading right now, no, or how we're reading years ago, no, but it makes sense and start making sense with me. Oh, this is true. So I try to connect those, you know, the advices that I hear from my mama and my dad. And even though with my I have the honor that I still have my grandma right now alive, and I she's a Christian, but she spoke Quiche really well, you know, and I have to go with her and call her and ask my mom, hey mom, can you go with my grandma, and just I have some question for her. So I start digging it and asking her those words, and she gave me her thoughts about that, and I'm like, okay, this is cool, like this and that, and I tried to write myself apart separately, what it's how I will read or how I will write this myself right now, you know, and compare it to like the Popuch right now from Sam Kolob. I compare it with that and I'm like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. But again, it's a lot of work to do. Yeah. And but the point that I think here, what I was gonna say, it's really important that as a native speaker K'iche, it's important to question ourselves as well, and yeah, ask for advice for elders.
Yeah, it's similar to like you know, language is so it's always constantly changing and developing. So we can only imagine, you know, like I can't read Shakespeare. Like I could read Shakespeare, but will I understand it? I don't. And it's not just because of the poetic way of that it's being spoken, but there's some words in there that are no longer used in our language, in English that we use today. But I think that's this is why it's so important, because everybody tends to read the story and comes away more confused than ever. And then that's why I think it's important that, you know, we really understand, you know, what we're seeing and read the translation specifically from Sam Kolob, and then have K'iche speakers kind of help us with the concepts.
The way we even think about like interpretation and translation, even though those words in English and Spanish has such a limited meaning, in Puma, I'm sure when we talk about like what does it mean or explain what is an interpretation, what is a translation, it's literally putting it into your own tongue, into your own word, and transmitting a message from one worldview into another. And without context, that's not going to make any sense. So I definitely agree, like there's so many challenges doing that, especially with texts that have been removed by many generations, right? And is written in a way that our writing system now is so different. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of challenges and things to kind of like layers to peel back on even one word.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do here as we slowly read you know this book. And I think that's why it's important that we break it down in the concepts to really kind of understand what this worldview that we are reading is, you know. And it's a little bit different for us, but I think that we're very lucky to have the knowledge base, but also the language, right?
So without further ado, let's begin reading the part that we'll be reading for this episode. Bri, take it away.
When will it be the sowing and dawn? Who will be the providers? Caregivers? Let it come true. The waters that part, let it empty. Why should the earth arise? Its surface should be seen. After the sowing comes, that the sky and earth be born. Is it not the place of veneration, of invocation, of our formed beings, of our created beings? Let the formed people originate, the constructed people, they said then. Then the earth arose by their handiwork. Their words were enough for this to happen, for the earth to appear. Earth, they said, and immediately it emerged as if it were just a cloud, as if it were a mist. Began to appear, began to grow, the hills began to emerge from the water, and they immediately became great mountains, only by their prodigy, only by their power was the conception of mountains and valleys achieved, which immediately overflowed with cypresses and of pines. So the plumed serpent was happy. It was good that you came, Ukushkach. You, Hunrakan, and you, Ipi Kakulha, Rasha Kakulha. Our construction, they said then. First, then, the earth originated, the mountains and valleys. And the way of the waters was arranged, the streams began to walk between the hills. The place of the waters was already known when the great mountains appeared. Thus was the origin of the earth, when it was formed by Ukushkach, Ukushuleu, so called because they were the first to think of it. The sky was separated and the earth was separated from the waters. So it was then, what was me, what was when, they thought when they meditated to conclude, to finish their work. Then they thought of the animals of the mountain, hill keepers, and all the creatures of the forest, deer, birds, cougars, jaguars, snakes, rattlesnakes, yellowbeard, guardians of the lianas. They then said, Alom, Kaholom, is it just silence? Or do I murmur what must be under the trees and the vines? They better have their guardians, they said. That's when they thought, when they decided, and the deer and the birds were created at once. Then they distributed their dwellings to the deer and the birds. You, deer, on the banks of the rivers, in the ravines, we will make you sleep. Here, we will make you live. In the pahong, among the grass, in the forest, they have to multiply. In the four legs, they will have to walk and hold on, they were told. Then they established a home for the little birds and big birds. You, birds on the trees, they must nest on the vines. They have to live here. Here, they have to be reproduced. They have to multiply in the branches of the trees, in the branches of the vines. It was said to the deer, to the birds, when they did what had to be done. They all took to their habitats and places to stay. It was there, then, how the animals were given nests by the conceiver and the begetter. And when the creation of the quadruped was finished, they, it was said to the quadrupeds and the birds by the creator, shaper, Alom, Kaholom, speak, invoke. Not only chirps, you must invoke. Let everyone speak according to its kind, according to their group. The birds were told to the birds, to the cougar, to the jaguars, to the snakes, say our names, praise us. We are your creator, mother, your creator, father. Say then, Hun Rakang, Chipi Kakulha, Rasha Kakulha, Ukushkah, Ukushuleo, Tkol, Bitol, Alom, Kaholom. Talk, invoke us, adore us, they were told. But they couldn't talk, not like people. They just squealed. They just cackled. They just howled. Their language was not clearly manifested. Each one yelled differently. When they heard this, the creator and the shaper, it didn't turn out well. They didn't speak, they told each other. It was not been possible for them to say our names, speak of us, their creators, their shapers. It's not good, Alom, Kaholom said to each other. So they were told, they will be changed, because they did not turn out well. They did not speak. They have changed our mind, their food, their portions, their habitats, their breeding places. Yours will be the ravines, the forest, because they failed to adore us. They failed to summon us. There are still, isn't those who look towards us, beings who adore us, beings that respect, We should do it. Just accept your fate. Their bodies will be Chuta. So be it. That is their destiny, they were told. To small animals, large animals around the earth. Then they tried again and again. They tried to create those who would invoke them. Because the animals did understand speech, and that what called for them. It was not clear, and there wasn't a result. In this way, their meat was destined to be eaten. Their chore was chosen for them. To be killed was the destiny for the animals on Earth. That was how they tried again with creating people. People formed by the creator, the shaper, the conceiver, the begetter.
Here we'll take our first break from the story and try to interpret what we just read. And we'll propose different things about maybe the philosophies and the metaphors that are being used in this part of the story.
I think for me, it's pretty self-explanatory, right? When we take a look at how important was the hunt and how it ultimately helped us survive as a people, right? I think, you know, for us that maybe have never done anything like that, it is something difficult to take a life from an animal. You know, I know that all of us at this point that we're talking here probably don't do that anymore. We go to the supermarket and we just, you know, grab our meat, or for those who do eat meat. So we don't get an opportunity to have that experience of catching and killing our own food. But for me, it gives an explanation of why it was done and why it came to be. I don't know if anybody has kind of any thoughts on that.
I was actually thinking about, and this is how Willie always talks about going back to the primitive logic, about the transitions of being hunter-gatherers, right? Mm-hmm. Like thinking about how this was the time when people were still migrating with groups of other animals, right? So that they could eat, so that they could feed. Before the domestication of corn, because the domestication of corn allowed for a lot of groups of families, right, to be able to stay put and not have to necessarily follow around to hunt.
I wanted to throw an idea out there and see kind of what y'all think. And just to preface it, I want to go back to kind of what I mentioned earlier, like thinking primitive logic, but also referring to science when we think about some of these things. And from what I remember from the last podcast is that a lot of what we're reading is kind of explanations for things that were happening just on the earth, but also in the cosmos, whatever, in the planets, whatever that may be. At the very beginning, there's a part where it said Earth, they said, and immediately it emerged as if it were just a cloud, as if it were mist. And as I was reading this, I was just trying to think like scientifically and using that same type of logic. And I guess what came to mind was like the Big Bang, but like, I don't know if that's really like a proper line of thinking or like, you know, what, if at all there's any relation to that, but that was just kind of what came to mind, and I want to throw that out there and see what y'all think.
I think that makes sense to me, but not necessarily the Big Bang, but after the Big Bang. So if I'm not mistaken, and we can always look this up afterwards, but I think that after the Big Bang, when all of the different planets were formed and our galaxy was formed, if I'm not mistaken, prior to us having like breathable air, there was a lot of gas clouds. And that's actually what I was thinking of too, was all of the gas that was existing on Earth, which we could interpret as clouds, right? Might be different colors based off of different, different atoms that existed, right? Like what we know is made up of our periodic table. And in terms of like specifically the types of gases that exist here on Earth. So I think it makes like perfect sense what you're saying, that it like triangulates with that information that we know too.
For my imagination, when I picture this is, you know, our ancestors looking at a cliff somewhere in Guatemala right before dawn has come. And some places tend to be very misty in the morning. And then as soon as the sunrise comes, the earth just seems to appear like mist out of those clouds. And that's to me like where my imagination from artistic perspective and like a poetic way, I think that I would imagine creation being the same way, right? That things just appear in that sense. But I think Big Bang is a really good, maybe scientific approach to it as well. But I think obviously, you know, I think using more the imagination, that's how I picture this scene. It's like, you know, the mist in the morning, you don't see nothing. And then when the sun rises and the day clears, everything just seems to just come up, you know?
I agree with that, and kind of to the point of what Brie and Javi was saying about like before I guess life. I'm not, in case y'all didn't know, I'm not an expert on the history of how the world was created. So I believe there was a time period where it was just like a lot of volcanoes, right? And kind of along those lines where like the mist, the clouds, and I'm like, they're definitely from the highlands, you know? Like they're definitely from the highlands because there's all these volcanoes. I don't know. I just really appreciate like how all of what our line of thinking is kind of aligned to where, you know, the people, the K'iche people come from, right? Like the highlands, right? Or no, I don't know. Also, I'm not K'iche, so, but I do know the territory is in the highlands, and it's very, in Guatemala, there are many volcanoes, and there's many mists and clouds around this. And like you were saying, Jose, like in the morning, when you're living in the highlands, like that's the first thing you see.
Yeah, I think something curious about what you were saying right now, Aurora, too, is that in the Popol Vuh in general, like in other parts too, there's a lot of references to animals that don't necessarily live in the highlands. So like, for example, even in this section, there is the mention of the jaguars, right? But then at the same time, it was also saying that there are the animals of the mountains, like the cougar and the deer and those type of things. So I think it's curious, at least from my point of view, that there's mention of the animals from the Huyub and also from the Takah, like the mountains and then the like flatter area. And I remember like at some points, like especially more so when the keepers of Xibalba come into play, and Hunahpu and Xbalamke are in their places and whatnot, that and that part I read that a lot as being more like in the lowlands type of area because of the mountains that they reference and those type of things. So I think it's really curious that we're able to see that both, I guess, climates or habitats or ecosystems are mentioned in this section.
Yeah, I think that's a bonus for those who've joined the colonizing time to understand that, you know, the lineages of the Quichés came from multiple areas. And as they're remembering their creation story, it comes from different parts, right? Because as we've learned with Willie, is that some of those lineages came from the north. From the north, where, you know, the lowlands, where they had animals like that. So I think what's happening here is that, you know, this creation story is coming from different communities. And that's one thing it's always important to know, is that this is not I think what is always labeled as the Maya creation story, right? Because the Maya, as often is misunderstood, as that it's one community, and then obviously they're not homogenous. There's different creation stories that we'll see throughout different communities. But I think that here in particular, to Javi's point, we're seeing things that may not necessarily belong in the highlands, but there's some things that do belong in the highlands. So it's just like a mixture of things. So I think that's an important point that we need to make as well.
Yeah, I think it's. I understood one of the translations here that I really appreciated was keepers. And I actually resonate with that word keeper more than, I guess, even just caretakers, because when I think about the word ahau, or what we use, yao or yahao, it's essentially a keeper. And as a keeper, you're not only like looking over, but you're also, the way that they're described is also their teachers too, and parents are teachers, right? And it's not just like this, like one might mistakenly interpret this as like, I command you to like read it as like, I know we discussed this before, where some people view this as like a Bible, right? Mm-hmm. Like the commandments, and this is what it is, and that's can be very easy to misleading. However, it's more so like as keepers and teachers that are showing us like, in this worldview, this is how we take care of each other. Yeah. And I feel like it's very mutual, right? If you take care of like the earth, and the keepers are kind of like teaching us that through us showing respect. And that's how like I understood it.
The conversation that is happening between these forces of council that is creating and this idea of, you know, why do these natural forces require remembrance and require respect, or require somebody to be caregivers of their creation. But the way that we're relating this is to our experiences with our parents or the grandparents, who are technically our creators and our shapers, and they do ask for respect, and they do ask for remembrance. And that's kind of our interpretation of like what's happening here.
And just want to continue on to the next part.
Let's try again. Isn't the time of sowing and dawn approaching? Let's build who sustains us, who saves us. If not, how shall we be named, be remembered on earth? We already tried with our first works, our first creations, but it was not achieved. We were not adored or honored by them. So let's try to make respectful, obedient beings that sustain us, take care of us, they said. Then there was the construction, the creation. With earth and mud, they made the body. But they didn't see it well. It was not well built. It was nothing but soft. It was nothing but watery. It became undone. It crumbled and became damp. Its head couldn't hold up. Its face was turned to one side. Its face was still. It couldn't look away from him. It spoke at first, but without meaning. It soaked quickly in the water. "Not yet," were said between the creator and the shaper. "Let's consult it. So be it. It seems that he is not going to walk, that he is not going to multiply. So be it. You have to think about it again," they said. And then they undid. They destroyed its work, the creation of it. They then said, "What should we do? Let it be realized. Let our worshippers appear who invoke us," they said when they thought about it again. "Let's better tell Shpiakok, Shmukane, deity of dawn, deity of the evening. Let them consult the count of the days, the division of the seeds," the creator, the maker, said to themselves. Then they spoke with Shpiakok, Ishmukane. "This, then, is what they told the diviners, grandmother of the sun, grandmother of clarity, as they are called by the creator, the shaper. These are the names of Shpiakok, Ishmukane, Kunrakan," then said together with the sovereign feathered serpent, when they said to the priests, the builders, the fortune tellers, "Reveal how we will deform the created people in people trained to keep us. Let it call us and remember us. Let your word come, midwife. Arrive and the dawn to be summoned, to be worshipped, to be remembered by created people, formed people. So be it. Honor your name, ancestor of dawn, ancestor of dusk, twice conceiver, twice engenderer, old mother, old father, those of precious stone, those of jewels, the carvers, the sculptors, those of the green plate, those of the blue bowl, masters of incense, master craftsmen, grandmother of the sun, old guide, our grandmother, our grandfather, Shpiakok, the wooden people they made. The wooden people, the made people, Ishmukane, grandmother of clarity, so called by our creator and our shaper. Pass your hands over the maize kernels and over the tzite, so it can be done. So it can be clarified if we should dig, if we should sculpt their mouth and face from wood," they said. To the priests there then it was thrown over the maize kernels and the tzite, which was consulted on the count of the days and of the formation. It was said then from the grandmother, from that grandfather, Shpiakok, the name of the grandfather of tzite, Ishmukane was the name of the grandmother priest, creator assistant. That's what they said when they began the count of days. Let it be found and let it be revealed. Tell them that our ears are listening. Let them speak, let them pronounce, only that the precise mother can be found, the one who should be sculpted by the creator and shaper. If they are the ones who will sustain, the ones who will guard, let the sowing of the dawn be done. Your maize kernels, your tzite, your count of days, of the formation, make it work, make it demand, they said to the maize kernels, to the tzite, to the count of the days, to the formation. Have some shame, you Ukushkach, do not deceive the mouth, the face of the sovereign feathered serpent, they said. Later, they spoke in a direct manner. The wooden dolls will come out good, people of wood that talk and converse. Let it be, they said. The moment they spoke, the wooden dolls, the people of wood, were created. They spoke like humans. They conversed like humans. They were the people who populated the earth. They reproduced. They had daughters. They had sons. wooden dolls and people made of wood. But they did not have an essence. They did not have thought. They had forgotten their creators and shapers. They just walked, crawled. They had forgotten about Ukushkach. That's then how they were judged. They were just a try. They were just a demonstration of people. They spoke at first, but their faces were dry. They did not have consistency, neither their feet or arms. They did not have blood or any color. They had yet to sweat or have any fat. Their cheeks were thin. They resembled masks. Stiff were their legs and hands. Their bodies made noise. They did not know how to behave before the creator, the shaper, giver of life, giver of heart. At first, it was many people that were on earth. Here then was their annihilation, their demise, their destruction. They were killed, the wooden dolls, the people of wood. It was thought to flood them by Ukushkach. A great flood was made and brought down of the wooden dolls, the people of wood. Of the tzite were their bodies made of, which was labored by the creator and shaper. Of Sibake was the body of the woman that the creator and shaper wanted to make. But they were not competent, and they did not speak to their creators, their shapers who had made them, who had given them life. That's when they were annihilated, flooded. A great trementina dropped from the sky. Then came the scraper, the one who came to scrape their eyes out. Then the decapitating bats came, decapitators who cut off their heads. Then came the jaguar maulers who chewed on their flesh. Then came the jaguar scrambler who scrambled and dispersed their bones and nerves. They were broken, their bones splintered. They were chastised for their incompetence before their mother, creator, before their father, creator, before Ukushkach, also called Unrakal. Because of them, the face of the earth was darkened. A storm began. It rained in the day. It rained at night. The small and large animals entered. Their faces were cut up with sticks and stones. Their jars began to speak. Their comales, their plates, their pans, their nishtamal, their stone grinder, everything at this disposal became alive. You caused a lot of damage. You bit us. And so now you will become the bitten ones, said their dogs and turkeys. Their stone grinders said, on our face you grind it every day, day after day, at night and at dawn, always holy, holy, hooky, hooky, over our faces. This was our chore before you, when you were great people. Now we will test our strength. We will grind you and make dust of your bodies. Then came their dogs and they spoke. Why didn't you give us food to eat? Only you did was throw us out. Put us outside. You had a stick to throw at us when you ate. We were always scared of you. Because we didn't speak. Because of you, we almost died of hunger. But how would you have known? You were incompetent. With you, we would have perished. Now, we will bite you with our teeth that we have inside our mouth, said their dogs as they destroyed their faces. Then, after came the comales and their pans, they spoke and said, you caused us a lot of pain. Our mouths were stained with soot. Our faces were stained with soot. We were always over the fire. You burned us because we did not feel pain. Try that now. We will burn you, said all of them destroyed their faces. The stones from the hearth that were in the fire lunged themselves with great speed towards their faces. They caused a lot of damage. Desperate, they hurried and ran. They wanted to climb on top of their houses, but their houses crumbled and then they fell down. They wanted to run towards the trees, but the trees rejected them. They wanted to run towards the caves, but the caves would close on them. That those people were destroyed, the people shaped. The missing, changeable people disappeared. Their mouths and faces were destroyed. It is said that their descendants today are the monkeys that live in the forest, because their flesh was merely wood when they were shaped by the creator and shaper. And so the monkeys look like us, a remnant of that previous generation of people that were created and of people that were shaped. They were just dolls and just people made of wood.
I guess this could be a moment to see a little bit about this part with Shpiakok and Ishmukane. I guess the question would be like if context or what further knowledge, you know, we have in the group. I'm curious how people from our communities think about Shpiakok and Ishmukane. I think reading this the way that I was thinking about it, you know, at one point they, in the text, it mentioned like the keepers of the days, in a sense, or like there was something related with days and thinking about time. I don't know what the exact words were, but I guess to me, I kind of read that, you know, trying to think also just like what happens on the earth and in the sky and whatever, thinking about like the sun and the moon and thinking about how time passes and how a day is in a sense like the movement of the moon and the sun in combination. And then thinking about the part where they mentioned kind of like going and consulting the corn and the seeds and the kernels and whatnot, thinking about how the cosecha, the harvesting and the whole cycle of corn is also very much dependent on the cycles of the sun and the moon. So that was just kind of what was in my mind, but I was just hoping to see, you know, what y'all think and maybe just get a little more context and information on that.
I think this is a moment where practices of the community were put into the story to help understand it a little bit better, because one thing that we're seeing here is that not a mistake, but the first creation of animals wasn't necessarily what these creative forces wanted, because they didn't speak. And then what I mean about things from the community is that Will, you know, as Willie has talked about, has when you go to, you know, a tzite reading, it's to help to give you a better outcome of something, right? So at this point, these creative forces have failed, and from a perspective of finding keepers or finding people that will remember them, so they go to the grandfather and they go to the grandma to basically do a tite reading to try to figure out how they can have a better outcome.
No sé, yo creo que lo que yo agarro de esta parte es como...
Puma says, I don't know what to take away from this part, but what it does show me is how much of a respect these forces of creation have towards these elements mentioned here, like the tzite, and how important it was for them to use the consultation, the utilization of the tzite. What I was gathering here from all of this is that they're showing respect to certain elements. And this respect plays an important role on the act of the consultation of the tzite, which means that it's used here and it continues to be used in our communities.
Something that this also made me think about is I remember one of the, I don't remember exactly which class it was that we did. It was in season one, where Willie went through the counting of the days and how, starting from Imosh, right? We see a description of how the earth or life itself, and what we consider life on earth, right, has developed over time. And I think that we kind of see that here because if they're already referring to a count of the days, that to me it is an indication of there has already been this observation of the way that life is developing.
Yeah, I just want to go back a little bit into what you guys were asking me about Shpiakokish Mukane. Like Puma saying, you know, for the Akihabo, the ones who have the tite, you don't usually ask people, ask them, you know, what the secrets are, you know. And I think from here is, but the, I still have traveling the with the translation of saying diviner. ¿Cómo se decía ahí?
Diviner or fortune teller.
Diviners or fortune tellers. And again, I still have trouble translating this into Spanish, because in Spanish it doesn't quite say that, but instead of the English. But then something that we know is that in colonial text, and then still elders, you know, like in Momostenango and maybe Nahualá and Sumbil, they call this pisón cacal, ¿verdad, Puma? Pisón cacal, and then it translates into Spanish as envoltorio sagrado. But then here we have the trouble of sagrado, right? And then I think when you read the tite, what you are giving is just approximations, and if we're talking about science. But you're not giving a certain, you know, like the tarot cards or the cuija or other, you know, instruments that other cultures use. And then you will see, you know, and the next that is Hunrakan and Tepeu Cucumatz who go and ask the elders, you know, for the advice. And then they throw the beans of the tite, but then they fail, you know, even the elders. You know, and then they will do it again, and they will do it again. And I think it's in the third or fourth time that finally they did it. So this, what I love about this part is that we are not perfect. Even we are giving advice or recommendations, it might not be the way that you wanted it. So it's the same thing with Akihab, is then you go and ask for a consultation, but then it's not certain of what it is. Again, it's just an approximation. And this is something that I love about this, is that when you go to your grandparents, they will give you advice about your parents, for example, or they will give you advice about more, you know, complicated things that they have lived. But then obviously the grandparents are not living what we're living right now, but at least they will give you an approximation about what their experiences were when they were young, for example. So I think from here is like, yeah, I still have trouble thinking that they are diviners or ¿cómo se decía la otra? How was the
Fortune
other concept?
tellers.
Yeah.
No, I think that's interesting because, again, one of the things that that we struggle with is thinking this as like a magic or a spiritual tool. And, you know, obviously the tite and all of that, I think it's something that, and maybe I'll make a side note of very briefly of what it is so that people can understand. Obviously, we, you know, not necessarily go into detail about it because obviously that's important to not share too many details, but I think it's important to understand the story of part of the story where they're trying to have a different outcome and they're asking for advice from a from the grandfather, from the grandmother, and they're using these tools to potentially create a better outcome. And as to Willie's point is sometimes those outcomes may not necessarily be the best ones.
Simply put, the tzite are red beans from the tzite tree,
that are used in the Maya Highland communities as a tool for advice and forecasting the outcomes of important decisions. Community members will ask advice from the Ahkihab, or daykeepers, of their community on important matters. The Ahkihab will use mathematical equations with the Tzite to give advice. This practice has been used in communities for thousands of years, and it's important to not overshare the complex details because these are very important cultural elements that should be safeguarded.
This is more like on the funny side, but it reminded me of like the wooden people, about how when my mom would be talking to me and she would say that I wasn't paying attention, that it was like talking to a plank of wood.
But I think it's poetic, right? That, you know, these people didn't necessarily have feelings or didn't have emotion. And I think it's a metaphor of like, you know, using wood as an example of what a people that don't have feelings or don't have kind of emotions would be, right? Would be made out of wood. I think the interesting part here was how all the different you know tools and household items and turkeys and dogs ultimately turned against the wooden people. And what's interesting is if you look a lot of the ancient artwork from like the classic period, you will see scenes of animals with plates. And they will have eyes, and they will have, you know, arms, and they will have as like they're feasting. And to me, and a lot of people have interpreted that as this part of the story, which is interesting that it appears, you know, from the classic period, this particular moment. I mean, people are just proposing that is the scene that is happening, but it's obviously a violent, violent end for the wood people.
Yo creo que es algo que estaba mirando también yo de estos intentos de creación de la importancia.
Puma says, something that I was observing with these attempts of creation is the importance of the creators to be remembered. As you were all mentioning early on, I myself would like to be remembered. It was important for these creations and these different humans to remember their creators. One other thing that seems to be really important to these creators is the act of multiplying, and that they needed to reproduce. The first attempts of humanity didn't reproduce, and they didn't remember their creators. I'm thinking that these two things were really important to these creators, but simply to remember them and for these creations to multiply was all they asked for. This, in my opinion, is so that it can continue. The generations can continue to always remember their creators.
I think something that's connected to that too is, you know, all of these so-called inanimate objects that come alive, that are alive, right? I think that speaks to a lot of what is contradictory to what we're seeing in this stage of capitalism right now, with like we think about like fast fashion and how people just throw things away all of the time, right? We think about the creation of plastic and how in some places plastic is just thrown out, and then you have in other places like where we're from where the same like plastic bin is used over and over and over and over until even when it has a crack in it, they'll try to fix it because there's a different level of respect that goes with your things.
Yeah, and then what happens when, you know, we don't take gratitude for the things that we're using, right? And then back to what you were saying, Javier, is like showing gratitude and respect for the earth, or showing some sort of respect for things that sustained us, I think is a very important part of this part of this story.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When it says, you know, in that list, the page 17, mm-hmm. when it has like the list of all of the objects, mm-hmm. and it says they're nishtamal, Does that mean like the gal or ceniza?
I would
like
assume.
That was some. That was something I learned this week in my Nahuatl class was because I was asking my mom what kinds of tamales use ceniza and what kinds of tamales use cal. And so that's what that was my question with this is like whether it refers to those ingredients, I guess, so to speak, or if it, because nixtamal is a process, not like a thing.
I mean, it's still I would assume it's obviously something extremely important that technically is like a tool, and then maybe it turned on them. That I don't know, but that's the translation that's in there. But maybe, yeah, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I think this part of the with the quote unquote objects kind of like turning on the wooden people. I think this one was particularly curious and also like hard for me to know how to interpret. Yeah, I don't know if I have a comment beyond that, but I think what you were saying, Jose, like it makes sense that, you know, we think about when we don't take these things seriously, even if if humanities or people label them as like material things or as objects or what they may be, when in reality they're things that sustain life and sustain survival and also allow for us to continue existing on the earth, you know, it would make sense that we kind of have this reaction to the point where, yeah, in a sense they end up destroying us because we lack that respect, we lack that appreciation, as you mentioned, Jose. And in a sense, maybe like take them for granted, like something that seems so simple, but is actually something that has sustained us for thousands of years, you know? And I think that in the United States, it's one thing. And I think it's another, like when you are able to go to your homelands and, you know, you see the what's it called, like the piedra, the molcajete, the thing that like grinds the corn, or like, you know, something as simple as like a comal even. Like, how important is that, despite maybe we don't even think about it all that much or sometimes overlook it, but understanding that without that thing that helped us to survive, we would maybe not even be here today. So
algo interesante que estoy mirando ahora y reflejando ahorita que mencionan eso.
Puma says, something interesting that I am now seeing and reflecting back on is the list of things mentioned that attack the wooden people. The list of things are used for food, and the food is connected with fire. I'm not sure how this has any relevance, but I am seeing the relationship with fire and the things that are mentioned here on this list.
I like this list, right? I was thinking about it. And as you were reading, Brie, I was thinking about like literally interpreting it in my head. Like, how would I say this in Acateco? And to your point and Javi's point about like how we're so disconnected, it's not only like translating it into English, but like the point in time that we have come to in with capitalism. And regardless, like whether it was 200 years ago or right now, in our language, we always refer to objects as where they come from. Like if I say, I don't just say the house. I refer to like the part will always use a term of what material it's made out of. So I won't say the na. I'm going to say te na if it's made of wood, or jen na if it's made of some stone material. And if it's like something with metal or earth, the part is changed. And I think that really helps us keep the connection of where objects, right, for lack of a better word in English, come from. And it's very easy to imagine them being animated because they're given their name, like plates, comal, pans. But in a language like Acateco, they're also given their original form when you're saying the. So I don't know if that's how Quiche works as well. But yeah, I think that's something that we lose when we are looking at this in English or Spanish. So I just wanted to point that out.
That's really interesting, because that means that when you talk about the jars beginning to speak, you would talk about the jars being made of like barro or something like that, right? Which is earth. Of the earth. Mm-hmm. Which is of the earth. Mm-hmm. Same with the comales would be of the earth. Mm-hmm. So it's actually the earth attacking these people.
Yeah, the earth for, I guess that's one way to explain it in English. Like,
right.
The earth form jar, like the earth form plates,
the clay.
Yeah, the clay form versus just referring to it as the jar or their jars. But yeah, there is a lot of things lost when it's translated into.
Yeah, that makes so much English. Sense. And that's why it's important that, you know, we have folks that are fluent in Mayan languages, because that gives it so much of a different concept, right? That way that you just explained that versus in English, where it's just a laundry list of things, but it's actually there's a connection there that I think you just made that I've never realized. ¿Cómo se dice comal en quichepo?
Shot.
Shot.
Shot, ¿no?
Shock. Shock, shock, shock. Yeah. Shock.
¿Y plato?
Ya iba a decir.
Lac.
Sec.
¿Ah? ¿Cómo dijiste? ¿How do you say?
Sec.
Sick.
Mm-hmm. En comal es sam.
¿Y el molcajete, cómo se dice?
Jokbal.
Jokbal.
¿Qué es molcajete?
Para hacer el
piedra de moler.
Yeah.
The piedra de moler.
Stone.
Grindstone.
Stone grinder, right?
Yeah. How do you say it in Acateco?
I'm trying to think of it.
Well, can you repeat that again, Puma? Was it hook? No.
Hook bal.
Hook bal.
Ah.
Hook bal.
De ahí viene la raíz hokom.
Ajá. Hokom.
Porque en quiché no se dice pepián, se dice hokom.
Hokom.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. No, that's a really good point, though. Aurora, that you're making, and you know, I think. It correlates here, right? That these things made out of earth are destroying it, destroying these people. But I think the part that always stands out to me in this particular thing is that the descendants of these people become monkeys that live in the forest. It always fascinates me that. You know, as we learn science today and we talk about evolution, we have an understanding that at some point, or there's a theory that humans evolved from monkeys, right? I always just find that fascinating that there was that connection that was made here, right? And then it's, I don't know if anybody has any thoughts on that.
I feel like I've been trying to think about this last part too, Jose, because when I was reading it, I was like trying to also think about it, but I feel like you said it right. Like, wood is something that isn't necessarily going to like speak or vocalize in the way that Tzacol, Bitol, Alom, Cajolom were maybe expecting. So I think that when you mentioned that kind of helped me think of like, okay, maybe the monkeys, they have their own way of communicating, and while they certainly speak and they certainly vocalize, it's maybe not the way that they were expecting. And thinking about evolution and whatnot, like maybe monkeys who are where we come from many, many times ago, were like that first try, and then eventually once we evolved into humans and the species that we are now, then now we're that version that can speak and vocalize and pay that respect in that way. So I don't know, I guess like when you mentioned that, that helped me think about this part in particular. I'm not sure what other people's thoughts are.
I actually, yeah, like I was, you kind of reminded me of the monkey part in, there is this, I guess we refer to the howler monkeys as bats. And I think Puma in Quiche, is it in general, is bats like just generally monkey? Or is it a specific kind?
No, it's in general monkey.
Yeah, and I just find that interesting because I was thinking about the bats, and in, well, what I've heard about like people born on that day, there is this is maybe not from just a general, this disclaimer, this is not something that all Acatecos or Anjobal think, but just, you know, I've heard some people say that people born on the day of Pat are lazy. Yes. And I used to think that, like, oh, maybe it's because, you know, there's this sense of creativity supposed to be aligned with those people. And, you know, because of colonialism, anybody, you know, they wanted to get rid of people who were creatives, right? Like, they just want you to work, right? Like, during colonialism. But now it's like, actually, this makes sense because, like, the people who were turned into monkeys were thought to be, like, no good. And maybe they didn't, over time, like, no good turned into lazy. So, I don't know. I just found that interesting, reading this over with y'all.
That's very interesting. I can confirm that that's true.
I have a... So who's a butt in here then?
Chamales, but
yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
100% true. And I hope my wife doesn't hear that because she'll confirm 100% that that's true. No, that's
interesting. So funny.
That's interesting, and I think that those are the little tidbits that I think we want to wean out, take out, because, you know, those are the things that make the story more human. And Aurora read my whole life. Damn.
I guess my relatives did, you know. yeah, they're said to be like, oh, they don't like doing work, and the way we describe work is like manual work, right? So I just interpret that as like, oh, it's because, you know, there's this pressure placed on us to like,
yeah,
work for the Latinos.
Yeah.
But then reading this over, I was like, actually, this makes sense too.
Yeah, I have very soft hands. They're not rough or anything like that.
Wow.
It was funny because my dad used to be a house painter, and he used to take me to the summers to paint his houses, and I would make believe that I worked by painting my pants with paint. And
being like, my God.
Look at me, boy. I worked so hard, but I was not doing shit.
I'd like to get everyone's input and see if y'all agree, or what you would add, or maybe what you would challenge, or what have you. But I think that this section was quite interesting, because I think that it gave kind of an insight into just like the general sense of cosmovision and the general sense of thinking about how, at least I've observed, that communities and what they think about who we are as people, as beings on Earth, but then also like how we interact with the Earth and with the planet and whatnot. I think that we see here that Tzakol, Bitol, Alom, Kaholom, etc., get kind of frustrated when the beings that they create don't pay them the respect that they are expecting, right? And I think that, I mean, we see how their first few creations weren't able to vocalize that, and put in the like, and by, and as a result, weren't able to pay that respect, right? And so I think that this section for me, and trying to also relate, you know, how our communities think about our place on the planet and the way that we interact with the earth and whatnot, I felt like this was kind of like a snapshot that, in a sense, gave some of that context and some of that essence as to why you ask for permission, for example, when you go to certain places, or if you go to certain mountains, or if you go to a place that is to be respected, I guess is the way to put it. So I felt that this was a reflection of that, and it was also quite interesting to see how that is still very much alive today.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because one of the things that I thought about was I've heard like elders say like los abuelos son celosos, you know, like I guess it would be considered ancestors, right? Is that how you would translate that? Los abuelos, las abuelas, ancestors, the grandfathers and the grandmothers, they're jealous. And I asked I asked this contador de tiempo, this daykeeper who is Xinka, recently, like this past weekend, because she said something similar. And I was like, is it jealousy? Like, what exactly does jealousy mean? And she said, what los abuelos quieren respeto, y nos, si nosotros no respetamos, nos cachimbean. Which is like I don't know if it's quite like punishment than it is like, how do you say, how would you translate that?
Like
it's not even like castigate, you know, because it's castigate. It's not even quite so much that. But yeah, I think Puma, like that's the best way that.
Una cachetada.
Yeah, like they smack you. Like they'll smack you if you don't listen, if you don't respect them.
I think for me, you know, when I agree with both of you, but I think one of the words that I think is often missing, that, you know, that I think what reminds me of, like, of my parents, is that they want to be remembered, right? You know, for as somebody who has children, and then somebody who has lost a parent, it's important for me to remember my dad, right? Like, and it's important that my kids who've never met my father know who he is, right? And as I think about future, right, when I'm no longer here, I also want to be remembered. I also want my dad to be remembered. But I think for us, that's a very important thing, right? Is to remember that we came from a lineage. We come from people that, you know, from a modern history standpoint, from my perspective, is like they worked really hard to get us where we are, and we have to remember that. So I think that it's also respect. It's also you know, memory. It's that I think is what I get from a lot of this here, that this particular passage, is that it's not wrong to think, right, like that your ancestors want them to remember you, right? And it's I always talk to my kids about this, is like, remember your ancestors or show them respect, because scientifically they're with you, right? DNA, they're not anything, they're part of who you are. So I always kind of equate it to self-love, right? Like, if you love your ancestors, you're loving yourself. So to me, that's kind of like where I see this passage, where these creative forces are thinking about, like, who are, not only are they going to be caregivers and providers, but who are also going to remember us.
Yeah, I just hope for the listeners that this is helpful context, because I know that picking up the Popol Vuh and just reading it right off the bat can be a very daunting and confusing experience. And so I'm just hoping for everyone that's listening and is starting to read that this is helpful context and helpful for giving a sense of how to interpret what the Popol Vuh narrates. And I just hope that it's a useful tool, because I mean, even just like talking through it right now, I feel like for me personally, it was just helpful for getting some ideas of how to think about things, or, you know, just exchanging with everybody and hearing what everyone has to say is super, super helpful. So
yeah,
appreciative to y'all for that as well, for the time and for the space.
Thank you for everyone listening. We look forward to hearing your comments, your questions, and feedback. If you are a Patreon subscriber, we will be uploading a read-along text plus the glossary. We will be back in the next episode in a few weeks. This episode was produced and edited by the Popol Nah team. Music by Walter Bass Hoch, Maya Kachikele.